Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah.
It will be fun. I'm sure this weekend will be fun. Hey, good news. Today, it is Friday. Welcome back to Overnight America. One last hour together. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. Any part of the show could be downloaded at KMOX.com/ONA. And we keep the phone lines open for you, warmed up for you. I don't know if you know this. Yeah, our producer keeps the phone receiver under his arm, where it is nice and warm when you call. 314-436-7900. You do have the invitation. It's open to you. Also, 800-925-1120. So this last hour, if there's anything you want to bring up, you can. I'm going to hit a couple of different stories, and we're going to talk to Dr. Daphne DeMarnif on marriage. An interesting look on marriage. We'll do that in a little bit, too. Want to talk some blues, which is pretty exciting. Sleep. Ooh, sleepy sleep. Hopefully I do not put you to sleep this hour, unless you want to be put to sleep. And then, yes, I hope I do put you to sleep. There was a story that I covered last week. Yeah, not this week. It was last Tuesday, I believe, where we were talking about a study that came out that talked about how many percentage of Americans use the pool as a shower, an alternative form to showering. And it was really gross. And how many adults actually use the pool as a toilet? So they'll hop in there. Adults that know better. It was like 50% have admitted to using the pool to go number one. And that is gross. So they went a little bit further. ABC 22 out of Dayton talked to a doctor, an actual doctor, about how gross is a pool. Now, we know that people do these things in the pool, but actually, how gross is that pool?
I'm gonna admit it, I don't shower before the pool. I definitely shower after. So how many people do you think are really showering before?
I think the percentage is pretty low. I mean, you know, if you go to any public pool, they'll say, please rinse off before right. You go in. But I think that the number is pretty low.
I think so too. I worked at a facility, a rec center, and I also worked at a community center. There was a pool there. So all the part-time workers like myself, we were all out there and we all saw the same things. And you know what? No one ever really did what you should have done, which is hose yourself down or wash yourself down before hopping in that pool. Now, the facilities were there for people to do that. The ability for them to do it was very easy. They just hop under a stream of water before they hop in there, right? A little shower or whatever it was in your bathing suit. And then you're done. You go in there. That's all it took. But no. Ugh. Try to get some of the dirt and grime and sweat off of you before you go in there.
I actually don't know the statistics, but it's probably really low. But it is really important because the chlorine and everything in the pool is diluted when you introduce all the chemicals from your skin or whatever products you use in your hair. And so those chemicals are important because they kill all the germs. And so if you dilute that fact, then you're putting yourself and others at risk too.
Which is really interesting. I guess you don't think about it like that, because the article I was reading, they were talking about, you mentioned your what you use in your hair, but they were saying your makeup, your deodorant, all of that affects the chlorine and the pH levels in the pool. Is it
deodorant, everything. You just being a generally stinky, dirty person, right? All human beings sweat, and they all have certain grime to them, and they all have certain shininess to their hair and everything. Just think about all of that just being washed away in the water. And that pool is not your personal bath. it makes me never want to go to a public pool ever again. And my son will go to the public pool, like he'll take swimming lessons, for example. So we'll go to the community center, whatever it is, and he'll sign up for the swimming lessons. He's four. And now I could only think of one thing. He comes back from the swimming lessons. How much of other people's you-know-what did he come in contact with inside of that water? Ugh, makes it so gross. Don't even want to think about it.
Like a spread of disease? Is that what we would worry about? Or?
Yeah, so...
What? No, you should have said, no, don't worry about disease. Did you really have to try to now make me worry about one more thing?
Yeah, so...
Nah.
Chlorine is meant to kill all the germs. So if it's not as effective because of the dilution and the reactions that it occurs with the other chemicals that you provide, then it's not as effective. So, you know, you could potentially causing more germs to spread and you don't want to be
so
part
gross.
Of that.
You know, instead of putting sunscreen on the kid, you know, he comes out and you get all the sunscreen on him. I'm just going to rub him down in Purell. Come on, let me get your Purell. Get you all the Purell on, all you can take right across your body. Ugh.
Now, should you shower after the pool as well?
Well, of course, because you've been exposed to chlorine and then...
And worse. Now, she just said you can get disease.
The chemical reactions that happen are other chemicals. So a lot of times that odor that you smell, you think, oh, there's a lot of chlorine in this pool. It's not actually the chlorine that you're smelling.
Oh, please don't tell me it's what I think it is. Please don't tell me what I think it is.
It's chlorine reacting to everything else.
Like number one, when kids don't, and then even adults. Ugh.
In the pool that is causing that odor. So you're like, oh, this must be really clean and safe because there's a lot of chlorine. It's actually the opposite. And so you really want to make sure to get all that stuff off your skin and hair.
You made me realize something, which was the face I made. So when you go to a pool and a public pool and it really smells like chlorine, that means it's not probably all that clean.
Well, it means there's a lot of chemical reactions going on.
Wow. Oh, so gross. I don't even want to. You know what the doctor also said as part of this article out of Dayton? Doctor says there's 1 to 3 ounces of urine per person in the pool. So if you do a head count of done 1, 2, 3, 4, okay, there's 10 people. Okay, there could be upwards of 30 ounces of urine in that pool. Ugh. So gross. Eric from St. Louis. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Doing all right.
Hey, I remember when growing up, I mean, there was, like, if you peed in the pool, there was a dye that went off, and everyone knew you peed in the pool.
Wait, did you actually see this in person, or was this just an urban legend?
Well, I think my mom probably told me that.
Yeah, I've never seen that. I don't know if that actually exists, because everyone's brought that up. But I've never seen that in practice.
You remember, did you watch a movie before called Caddyshack?
Yeah, I've seen Caddyshack.
Okay. Remember the Butterfinger that was floating around?
There was Snickers bar, milk. Oh, Baby Ruth. Yeah. I remember that one.
That, I mean, that stuff's funny, dude. When you jump in the pool, you jump in. Go for it.
So if you got a Baby Ruth in there, that's a legitimate concern. Now, if you work in a public pool and you see something like that in there, you literally have to drain and clean and you got to get everyone out.
Right. I mean, I would say just bleach the heck out of it and go on. And I'm trying to clean it up, man.
Bleach it.
All right. Love y'all.
Thanks,
love y'all.
Eric.
Take
Bye.
Care, okay?
Okay. Does anyone that has done any pool maintenance, is there such a thing that changes the color of the water if someone goes number one in it? I honestly believe that's an urban legend. I have never seen that in practice in my entire life, ever. I don't know if it actually exists. Seriously, if it does, let me know. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. It, from what I understand, people say it looks like a squid or something under the water that shoots ink. So it kind of like surrounds you and it changes the color around you. To me, that's just an urban legend. No, I don't think anyone's ever seen that, but every mom warned you. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Wow, I just saw this. I didn't know that on May 24th, one of the greatest musicians of all time was born back all the way in 1941. Bob Dylan turned 78 years old today. Wow. I tell you, I love Bob Dylan. If I could pick one person to interview and I had the ability to do it, it'd be Bob Dylan. I know most radio and television and anyone that has any connection to the media, they always have, wow, that would be the one person I would want to sit down with and really have a conversation with. It would be Bob Dylan. I mean, he's just so fascinating. I think there's another Bob Dylan documentary coming out in a few weeks. It's set for June, somewhere in there, on Netflix. And, oh, man, happy birthday to Bob Dylan turning 78 years old today. I have so many questions I would ask him, and I'm just so fascinated. Unfortunately, Bob doesn't really do sit-down interviews anymore. He doesn't have to. He's a traveling guy, and I'm sure he loves to go to these different locations and perform to all these different types of people, but I don't think he sits down, and I don't think he talks to anyone anymore, which is kind of a shame. He does this one radio hour. The Bob Dylan radio hour is just phenomenal. If you ever get a chance to listen to it, it's just really, really fantastic. But we play some Bob Dylan. You know, this song written, I don't even know what year, I'm going to guess somewhere in the 60s, could have been written today. I listen to Bob every once in a while. I rarely listen to music. Mostly I'm listening to podcasts or other radio performers just to kind of get an idea of what people are doing out there. I just like to hear other talk show hosts. You know, I do it for my entertainment, but I also do it for studying. You know, I like to know what's out there. But whenever I listen to music, it's going to be a little Bob Dylan. And listen to the lyrics on this and tell me this doesn't just speak out to, you know, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, 2010s, and forever. I mean, this is such a universal song. And I don't think there's any better songwriter in the history of music. Well, you can say certainly there's never been a better American songwriter. But man, you're not going to find anyone that could put a song together like this.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, or the times they are a-changing. Writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. 'Cause the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing. Senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times they are a-changing. It is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times, they are a-changing.
Wow. I mean, it's nearly perfect. I say Watchtower may be the most perfectly written song. My favorite Bob Dylan song is a song called Tangled Up in Blue. Love Tangled Up in Blue. Just such a wonderful story. And he's so good at putting these songs together where you really don't need a hook. Like, you can just tell a story. I don't know how many songwriters can do that. It's very few could make it worthwhile to stand the test of time over the years. Good old Bob Dylan. Happy birthday. 78 years old. Yeah. If I can have one person to sit down with, it would be him. Love to have a conversation with Bob Dylan. I don't think that'll ever happen, but, you know, you put your list together, your fantasy list of people you'd love to interview. And I'm no Larry King or Barbara Walters or whatever, but I don't think he sits down with anyone anymore. Maybe I should write him a letter. I think he'd appreciate that. Bob Dylan appreciate that. Let me do this real quick. The St. Louis Blues, man, I am so pumped up for game one on Monday. And Kevin Colleen did a great whole nother story on the Blues. And there's a reason why this is important, not just for the hockey community in St. Louis, but really all of St. Louis. And let's do that.
When I was in grade school, the Blues were so popular that we played driveway hockey all the time after school in our tennis shoes. The goalie wore pads and a face mask, and for a net, we would just draw the net with a piece of chalk on my dad's garage door. He didn't like that when he came home. The puck was a hollow orange plastic thing which somebody would cut a hole in the top of it and fill it with BBs so it would have a confident snap when you do a rising slap shot on the goalie. If it was too cold, we'd play hockey in the basement and use the staircase as the goal. One time, a shot, a rising slap shot to the right of the goal, broke the glass on a framed picture my dad had of Lee surrendering his sword to Grant at Appomattox. After that, we only played in the driveway. When the asphalt driveway would wear down our wooden hockey sticks to the point where they were no good, we could get on our bikes and go to downtown Webster to Smith's Sporting Goods and buy a $4 plastic blade extender, and it would fit snugly onto your sawed-off shaft of the stick. And then, in a delicate procedure, you would hold the plastic over a red-hot stove element while your mom shook her head, and you would grab the blade and bend it to a gentle curve. This was a procedure as delicate as putting a plastic windshield on a car model in the childhood days and not getting a glue thumbprint on the windshield. My plastic hockey blade extensions were always fingerprinted up and not too professional. Once, around 1970, when the Blues were really hot, we got a freezing rainstorm. Remember the one where you could skate in your backyard? Everybody was playing hockey on their lawns. When the weather got really cold, the games would move to the nearby golf course pond. It was an age of Blues hockey mania. The cool kids had the official jerseys, and we all wanted to wear our hair as long as Gary Unger. But our parents said, no, that's just as bad as John Lennon. Our parents did approve of those tabletop hockey games with the sliding rods. My mom bought three of them once for a Christmas party with adults, and she put them out next to each other on the dining room table. The adults were drinking and laughing and trying to score. When the party was over, she returned two of them, and we just kept the one. After a while, the tabletop hockey game went into the closet, the Blues cooled down, and I haven't seen kids playing driveway hockey for years or tabletop hockey either. But maybe all of that will come back with the Blues on a run. Well, a whole nother story. I'm Kevin Killeen.
Oh, man, I would love that. I was the same way as a kid. I would go out every day after school. I would rush home to do my homework. When my homework was done, I would be able to go down to the street where all the kids were playing street hockey. And we'd play up until you had to go home when the street lights popped on. I had a net, so I carried the net down. Well, I rollerbladed down and with the net and my stick. I had some goalie equipment. Sometimes I played goalie, sometimes I didn't. Just depend. We switched up and would normally have different positions we'd play. And I remember we would just go at it until someone yelled car, and then you'd go on the side of the road and then go back out and play. And you'd wait when someone had to go chase the ball somewhere else. We played with the ball in the street, not the regular puck. And man, every day we would do that, and there was nothing better. Oh, so great. Love that whole nother story. Kevin Kleen's so great. Coming up next is Dr. Daphne DeMarnif, and we have a conversation about marriage. Why not? It's Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now is author of the new book, The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together, also a special anniversary edition of her previous book, Maternal Desire on Children, Love, and the Inner Life. Dr. Daphne DeMarnif, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
It's a fascinating look at marriage. I think that there's a lot of focus, not only in pop culture movies, but of course, the country basing off a lot of what we do is, you know, based on the marriage and the structure of the family. So this is a very important topic. What's your background and how did you want to start writing about something like this?
Well, I'm a psychologist. I'm a therapist. I see a lot of couples and a lot of individuals. I'm also a married person as of 27 years with three grown children. So it's really my, I try to practice what I preach, but I study this stuff in the clinical situation and through reading and research. And I really feel that people aspire and hope for deep love in their lives. And I'm a romantic at heart. But I also know that we live a long time, and it's hard to sustain a healthy, happy emotional relationship over decades. And so I want to try to help people do that.
What I like at church is when they say, you know, who's been married the longest? And, you know, they kind of go around, and you see these couples that have been married forever. What's the longest marriage you've seen?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I know people have been married. I was at my dad's 95th birthday, and someone who gave the toast had been married 67 years.
Wow.
In my practice, people that age don't tend to show up. But, you know, I see people at all ranges. I see people who are about to get married. I see people who are in long-term relationships who aren't planning to get married but are committed. You know, I see people who are wondering whether they should stay together or not. You know, I see all kinds of people, and I think the book is really about all the different phases of life and all the different rough patches that people hit.
Maternal Desire, the first book that's out on a special anniversary edition. Did you have to change anything after revisiting that book?
I was seeing a lot of young mothers in my practice, and I was a young mother myself, and I was trying to think about the fact that it's really hard for women these days to kind of put together their work identity and their mothering identity and their partner identity, and I wanted to help women at that stage of life, just like I'm trying to help couples, to really think about their emotions, learn to articulate their emotions, get more skillful at managing their emotions, and having a happier experience of motherhood in that book, or in this case, marriage.
Yeah, and things change when you have a kid. That's a big test in a marriage, mostly because there's a lot of pressure, a lot of questions. If you're having your first kid, I remember, see, my wife and I, we have one child, and when we had the kid, oh my, how many questions we had. It was unbelievable. That is a test in itself. It's very much like a marathon, you know, and you have no idea all the things you need to do until it actually comes up and happens. There's everything there's so many questions that go around it.
Yeah, and I think people, you know, one of the reasons they get married in the first place is often to have children, not everybody, but many people. And then children, ironically, become one of the biggest stresses on the marriage because they take a lot of time and emotional investment. And sometimes what ends up happening, a lot of what I see in my work, is that slowly but surely the couple relationship moves lower and lower on the list of priorities because there's so much to take care of, whether it's work obligations or taking care of the kids. And that's what I'm trying to help people with. How do you balance out these things? How do you find time for all these things? Because, of course, relationships are messy and emotional, and they take time. They're not convenient.
I was looking at Reddit the other day, and they do this forum called Shower Thoughts, and someone, they basically these random little, you know, not really deep thoughts, but, you know, it seems like a deep thought at the time. And they said, marriage is essentially adopting a roommate for a long term or something like that. I remember it was something along those lines. You're basically adopting someone and saying you're going to take care of them for the rest of your life. It's kind of a little bit.
I have to say that sounds pretty pessimistic because it's saying that they're your roommate, which kind of implies you're not having a sexual relationship.
Oh,
and
sure.
You're saying you're adopting, which sounds like they're your kid. And I would rather say that a good marriage is a best friendship plus sex, that people find a way to be really close friends, and that translates into a real sense of intimacy with another human being.
Yeah. Dr. Daphne DeMarnith joining us here on KMOX in the two books. Maternal Desire is one that has just been re-released with a special anniversary edition, and also the new book that is out now, The Rough Patch, which just came out today. So so let's talk about The Rough Patch. And when marriages get to that point where there may be a rough patch, some people turn to different places. Some look to family. Some look to outside help. Some don't look for help at all. What are some of those signs that it's time to start looking for help?
So first of all, I just want to say the research shows that people generally wait too long to get help. And I think it's because people hope that the problem will go away. They try to just put one foot in front of the other. They don't want to admit that things are really that difficult. And there's a certain amount of shame and embarrassment and feeling like you can't work out your marriage. And so I really encourage people to understand. One of the points of this book is to say, hey, we all struggle. We're all amateurs at marriage. Nobody has the magic formula. I've been married 27 years and I still don't have the magic formula. And so accept that you're a fallible human being who's trying to be happy and make another person happy. And there are people out there to help you figure out how to do that. I think what happens generally is that people don't really quite know what's happening until it feels that it's already happened. Namely, they fall in love, they build their life together, they get jobs, they might have children, they have their house, they have their community, etc. And as they're going through the daily life, they subtly and slowly stop turning toward the other person for love and support because there might be hurts, there might be disappointments, there might be misinterpretations of the other person's behavior. And so they can't find a way to keep turning toward the other person. And what I always say to young couples is, always safeguard the desire to turn toward your partner. If you find you're not really wanting to turn toward them and you're actually preferring to spend time with other people or your friends, take it as a bit of an alarm bell and try to look for some kind of way to get back on track.
Well, that's interesting. What are some of the common things that people do to get back on track?
Well, I think, again, like I said, emotions are inconvenient, and we're all such doers, and we're all trying to fit in and cram in a lot in our lives. And one thing I want people to accept is that we're complex emotional beings with pasts and histories and families we came from and a lot of stuff to work out. And so just surrender to the fact that talking about emotions is a lifelong goal and process. You're never an expert, but you need to make the time to spend time together to nurture the relationship and to talk about the tough stuff. You know, sometimes people have this illusion that if they're happy, that means there's no conflict. And in fact, you know, my husband and I walk a dog together and talk about our kids and struggle with this or that problem. And I always feel like, you know, sticking with the conversation, even when it's hard, is how you get yourself to a better place to solve problems. So don't see that as your personal failing, that the conversations are difficult. The hallmark of a good relationship is you keep at it.
Dr. Daphne DeMarnith joining us here on KMOX and the new book out, The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. Is it an art? Is it an art form learning how to live with someone else?
I think it is in many ways. I'm writing an article now for Parents Magazine where I have a column on couples, which is about thinking before you speak. And, you know, we have this idea that I should be able to let it all hang out when I come home and sort of say whatever comes to mind. And actually, it takes a fair amount of discipline and self-control, just like any art. You know, if you're a painter, you know, there's years of practice in that. And then you can give over to the spontaneity of the feeling of the moment. And similarly, in intimate relationships, a lot of tender, vulnerable emotions are at stake. And you have to find a way to be able to deliver difficult news to the other person, be honest about your feelings and thoughts in a way that's tactful and sensitive. And that can take, you know, discipline just like any art form.
Yeah. I want to go back to Maternal Desire, which is also back out on special anniversary edition, which is kind of cool. Do you get a stamp or something on the cover to change that up? Like, did they repackage the picture on the front?
Yeah, it's a whole new cover, and I edited it quite extensively because I felt that the message was something I really wanted young women today to have a chance to experience, and I was fortunate to have my own 26-year-old daughter read it and give me editing advice. So I feel like it's very current for the current generation of young women contemplating motherhood.
Yeah, and it says, digging deep into the cultural, political, and personal meaning of the desire to have and care for children. What's the political aspect of that?
Well, so I teach a class to young couples who are about to have their first baby, and what I find really fascinating is that, you know, gender roles are still alive and well, even though they've changed a lot. And so often couples have very similar lives before they have a baby. They've both gotten education, perhaps. They've both gotten jobs. They have a fair amount of independence. They have their own interests and friends. And then they're suddenly pitched into a world where they depend on each other in a very deep way, and they have different roles. They, you know, physically they have different roles, and in some ways emotionally they have different roles. And that can be a shock to people who are used to complete gender equality. And the reason I wrote the book is I think there's so many incredible experiences that are available to women in exploring kind of the process of motherhood and who they become as mothers. And yet I think in the general culture, there's this idea that you should just sort of fit it into your previous life, that, you know, the heroes are the people who go back after 2 weeks of maternity leave and don't miss a beat. And it's sort of as if we still have this model that women should be continuing to function sort of on the male paradigm or the male model of, you know, kids not totally transforming them. Mm-hmm. And I think that we live in a day and age where I hope that both men and women can find a way to be transformed by what's a pretty miraculous journey. Difficult, very arduous at times, but really a deeply human experience of parenthood.
Yeah. So the two books, Maternal Desire, and also the new one that just came out today, The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. Where can people find it?
Well, of course, Amazon. Your local bookstores, order them there if they don't have them. I have a website, DaphneDeMarnef.com, where you can buy them from the website or learn more about my work.
Perfect. Dr. Daphne DeMarnef, what's that website again?
It's my name, which is complicated. DaphneDeMarnef.com. No spaces, no caps. I also have a talk at Google that you can look up. Just put in something that looks like my name and it'll probably find me.
Ooh, a talk at Google. Is it everything that everyone wants? The talk at Google? Do you get to walk in and it's almost like walking into like the tech afterlife?
No. It's just a normal-looking room and a lot of young engineers who are really hungry for relationship advice.
Oh, that's good.
So it just gives a short thumbnail of my work. If it interests you more, read the book.
Perfect. Dr. Daphne DeMarnef, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
That was fun. Fun talking marriage. It's a good idea to make sure your marriage is on the right track. And, you know, if you start going down that wrong path, do the right thing to correct it. It's Overnight America, KMOX. A little bit nervous for game one between the Blues and the Bruins Monday night, but you know what's fun is that I'll be here at the studio when the game's playing, so I'll get to get the show done and then watch it, and then right after the game, you'll be able to call in and react live on the air. It'll be great. And we have extended coverage for those games as well. It'll be in Boston for game one and two. Back here in St. Louis for 3 and 4, and I think that's all they'll need to win. The Blues, man, I am feeling it. I got this weird, funny feeling that they're going to do something that no one will expect them to do, which is sweep. I should stop saying that because it's so minimal. The odds of that happening are so low, but still, I don't know what it is. You know, there's going to be watch parties, so game one and two down at Enterprise. If you're a season ticket holder, you get in about 15 minutes early, but tickets open at 5:30 for the public, and you can go online, purchase them. The benefit for the ticket will be the Blues for Kids Foundation. General admissions can be sold first come, first serve. You can purchase online if you want to get them ahead of time. Lots of stuff, you know, live music and celebrity appearances, whatever that means. Wonder who's going to be out there. Full in-game production, stuff like that. You'll just have fun. I bet you Jeremy Boyer is going to be out there playing Gloria, I hope, after the game in a win. And if you haven't seen this already at KMOX.com, you have a little bit of time to do this still. So the first home game, game three, will be a week from Monday, which means that weekend the Blues are going to announce who the winner will be. They're giving away free tickets to each home game of the Stanley Cup final game, which is pretty awesome. But you have to go online to sign up at KMOX.com. It's not our contest. It's, of course, the Blues. But you can go online. There's a link at KMOX.com. And get yourself some tickets, man. Go and see the game yourself. You better go if you win those tickets. No question about it. Real quick, let's go to Bill over in Oklahoma. Hey, Bill, what's going on?
I couldn't sleep. I keep on thinking about what you said about Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Well, I was in the music business for about 13 years on a national scale. And for a while, I was site manager over at Mississippi River Festival, which was in Edwardsville.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have a lot of outdoor concerts over there. Anywhere from 3,000 to 40,000 would show up, 35,000. Mm-hmm. And I never got Bob Dylan. I just never got him. I mean, music's subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I look at guys like Glenn Frey and Don Henley and Don Felder of the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And Crosby and Stills and Nash, too, for that matter. And Tom Johnson and Patrick Simmons of the Doobie Brothers and Dennis DeYoung.
Yeah.
And the Tommy Shaw Sticks. I just never got the Dylan thing.
You throw in Sticks before Dylan? Did he ever perform there?
Huh?
Did Dylan ever perform? Did you ever see him perform?
Yeah, once.
Yeah. What year?
It was the year of the Rolling Thunder Review, whenever that was. I don't remember the year.
That's 70s? Is that mid-70s?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I've seen Dylan a few times, and I've enjoyed both of the times I've seen him.
Really?
Yeah. I've really enjoyed it. In fact, I saw him one time in Columbus about 10 years ago, and it was with, I can't remember who the first act was, but he was a pretty famous slide guitarist. And then the warm-up before Dylan was Jimmy Vaughn, which is Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother. He goes out there and plays blues. And Jimmy Vaughn brought out Eric Clapton impromptu to play a couple songs. Eric Clapton just shows up and then, you know, leads into Bob Dylan coming out on stage. I think the greatest songwriter maybe in the history of music. I can't think of anyone
that's... He speaks to a lot of people. I'm not denying it. But it is subjective. It's what you like. I know people that wouldn't pay $5 for a Dylan ticket in the front row.
I know. No, there's a lot of people like that, sure.
Well, I'm glad you found something in life that made you happy.
I would love to sit down with him. To me, is one of the most fascinating people alive. All right, Bill, have a great weekend. Good to hear from you.
You too, sir.
All right, that does it for Overnight America. Join me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. If you're Bob Dylan, just scanning the AM radio at close to 2 a.m. Central Time. Happy birthday, Bob. See you Sunday night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.